You're listening to an edited version of the live Voices of Montana statewide radio program. Find us on Facebook and subscribe for further podcasts wherever you get your audio on demand. I'm Tom Schultz, host of the program. Thanks for joining us, and please feel free to contact me at studio@voicesofmontana.com.
What's a day in the life like for a firefighter or anybody who's just deep into it in the fire season? Matt Hall is going to be joining us a bit later on. But a guy in studio here, Alan Olson, knows a little bit about the fire, too. Former legislator, former environmental field tech with the DNRC, and now the executive director of the Montana Petroleum Association. Alan.
Good morning, Tom, and happy Friday. God, I just love it when you're so upbeat. What do you like on Mondays?
Monday, I drag my butt around. That's I got to tell you the truth. That's what I do. Yeah. Hey, thanks for being here. Busy time. A lot of things going on when we talk about energy. You know, executive director of the Montana Petroleum Association. It's not just oil, though. You've been involved, former chairman of the Energy and Telecommunications Committee, as a state rep or state senator, too. Energy, for me, is a huge issue because I think that I say it a lot, and I have a rough time doing it. If we do the math on plans, especially by the Biden administration, to go net zero by 2050, I think it is, but even worse, by 2035, I don't know that it adds up. So I have concerns about this. But let's talk about the price of oil real quick, because it's rebounded. Of course, we'll see gasoline prices go up, and they have inched 10 cents in the last couple of weeks or so. So, you know, there's a give and take there, because that's good for Montana's economy, and that should kick in the Bakken.
Well, and you're right, Tom. I mean, you go back a year ago, in April of 2020, oil prices actually went negative by as much as negative $40 a barrel. But, I mean, when you think about that, that's a paperwork exercise. Nobody pays somebody to take 40 or pays them $40 to take their oil. But when you look at the average first sale price of crude oil last April of 2020 in Montana, it was about $9.38 a barrel. You know, you can't produce oil at that price. There were a lot of wells that were shut in. There were a lot of people that were laid off. But it also has an effect on not only the oil producers, but also the mineral owners, those royalty checks. Lost income from laid off employees, lost income tax income to the state, but also lost income from production taxes in the state. And we've seen it started coming up in May, but I mean, we pretty much stayed in the $30 range for most of 2020. But yeah, it is coming up. Spot price in Montana today is probably pushing about $63 a barrel. What you're seeing on the news, that's a futures price.
Okay. Yeah, the Brent crude.
Brent and West Texas Intermediate. Okay. So
so that does – I mean, there's a line there that kind of delineates when oil companies pull back and when oil companies move forward. There's a start and stop situation, and the oil companies and the energy industry they're not unused to that, because things are going to fluctuate in a lot of ways. The moratorium on oil and gas leasing makes it worse. It's really hard to operate under that whole start and stop mentality.
It is tough. You know, I went to work in the oil patch. I started out in 1977 with a little pipeline company, Abercrombie Pipeline there in Havre. They've now morphed into Barnard Pipeline in Bozeman. Worked for them for a few months and then made the jump and went to work for Halliburton. And, you know, after a couple of years working there, I was 24 years old and making more money than I could spend and looking at my profit sharing. And, you know, I had it in my mind, by God, I'm going to retire when I'm 40.
Yeah.
I'm going to be rich. And one of the old guys there said, kid, put it in the bank because this isn't going to last. And he was right. 1982 hit and the oil markets pretty much went in the toilet. And if we thought 82 was bad, 86 was even worse. But I've told a lot of young people getting into this, the money's good while it lasts, but it is a very cyclical industry.
how do you operate in that? I mean, I guess you put money in the bank when you can, right?
You put money in the bank when you can. You know, it's a commodity. Crude oil is a commodity. Natural gas is a commodity. When you've got a big supply, the price will go down. When the supply dwindles, the price goes up. I mean, it's no different than wheat, cattle, or hogs.
I guess we forget that, or I think I forget that, you know, because it drives a lot of production. You know, of course, the ag fields are going to feed the world, and right now our oil industry and our gas industry is very key, not just in America, but around the world. As we look at our energy demand, it's not shrinking. It's growing around the world. And so this is why I have concerns that it's hard to do the math about what a carbon-free economy is going to look like in 15 years, because I don't think we'd get there if you do the math.
Well, and Tom, you're right, and we're not going to get there with all the hype of a carbon-free economy. You got to keep in mind the billions of cars that are on the road worldwide. You know, the U.S. produces about 9 million cars a year. They're producing 25 million cars a year in China.
Wow.
You're not going to turn that off. We do not have the capacity to build electric cars to replace gas cars. We still need diesel for industrial purposes, whether it's hauling freight behind a semi-tractor, or hauling freight behind a diesel locomotive, or powering commercial airliners. I mean, it's just not there. I was talking to you here a little bit ago about, you know, a buddy of mine wanted to know, okay, how much oil seed are we going to have to produce to replace diesel in the United States? Well, we burn about 47 billion gallons of diesel fuel in the U.S. in a year. I got on a website. It's put out by a soybean consortium on using soy oil and how much oil you can get out of that. And according to them, you get about 1.5 gallons of oil per bushel of soybeans. And then they had a 40 bushel per acre average. So you run that out, and, I mean, we're going to need about 700 million acres of soybeans to replace distillate fuels in the United States.
700 million acres. How big is that?
Well, Montana, I think, is about 93 to 98 million acres, so do the math.
Well, yeah, roughly 6.7 or 7.9. So that is an improbability, is what it is.
That is an improbability. I mean, there are other oil seeds, but when you look at the acreage that's going to be involved to replace distillate fuels with essentially vegetable oil, it's going to be pretty tough to get there. So we're going to have some other ideas. You look at electric vehicles, like I said, to replace the existing fleet with electric vehicles today is not a realistic possibility. That's not saying it won't be in the future. But, I mean, it still took a long time to replace horse and buggy with the horseless carriage. So they're going to be around quite a while, and we're still going to continue to need crude oil and natural gas.
So let's talk about the transition. Alan Olson is with us, Montana Petroleum Association Executive Director. As I mentioned, former state rep and senator, lives up in that beautiful area, Roundup has for years and years, and also did some work with the DNRC, the Petroleum Association, the MPA, about 150 diverse members, including, as they say, upstream, midstream, and downstream companies. So this transition, there's a lot of rhetoric that's going on behind it. And so when we, and that's for political purposes. It obviously is. But when we peel behind that, the idea of creating, an economy, creating energy production that is, a little more friendly to our environment is received by all, including the oil industry. How do we transition? What's the steps? What's the discussion in those circles, in your circles, Alan, regarding that?
Well, we all know we need to have a clean environment. And there again, that's one of the things about refining in the United States, producing in the United States, we have got very stringent environmental regulations. And I'm going to use the Keystone XL pipeline as an example. That oil coming into the United States, number one, it's national security. But we're getting that oil from a friendly country right on our border that we don't have to worry about shipping crude oil across the ocean, whether it comes from the Middle East to the West Coast or the Middle East to the East Coast. And we're buying it from a country that has the same moral standards as the United States. That oil that would have been coming into the United States is still going to get produced, but it's just going to go to a different market. And those markets generally don't have the same environmental standards that we do here in the U.S.
And you can't overlook that fact. Let's go to TC Energy. The Biden administration rescinded the permit. Again, that's a start and stop sort of thing. I think and Alberta was a part of this. Canada was a part of the investment. I think it was roughly $8 billion they anticipated. I think they spent $5 billion of that. Oh, shoot, I got a breakup coming here in a minute. I'm just going to state it here because that's what I scare and what I worry about is that I think it's an illegal taking. I think that there's going to be a lawsuit regarding this. I think Canada is going to sue the United States. I don't think the Biden administration cares because right now they're just printing money or borrowing it from your great, great, great grandchildren. So, it creates a situation that for TC Energy, they were sort of in a no-win scenario. Now, I didn't give you enough time to kind of respond to that, so...
I won't lose my thought.
Okay, good, because that's huge, and I want to talk about that. Also, we need to talk about this judge's ruling, too, out of Louisiana. The Biden administration, through executive order, put a moratorium on oil and gas leasing. This was early on in the administration. This Louisiana judge's ruling stayed that order, and you're still yet to be determined the exact constitutionality of that order, but that's good news, yet still lots to be determined. And more to come here. Alan Olson, Executive Director of the Montana Petroleum Association. We are from Montana and for Montana, Voices of Montana. Alan Olson is in studio. And Alan, it's good to see you in studio. No, we took precautions because of COVID-19, and I think there were reasonable precautions. But it's good to see people again.
It really is. We just finished up with a couple days of meetings. Our annual Petroleum Association planning meeting. We had it in Three Forks this year. The people at the Sacagawea Hotel there in Three Forks, the Folk Board family. Boy, they took good care of us, and I tell you what, the food there was fantastic. The service was fantastic. We followed that up with the Treasure State Resources Association annual meeting here in Billings, and so it feels good to dress down and and kick back for the weekend. But
yeah, I'm with you on it. Seeing people again. I mean, that's who we are as humans. We need that kind of contact. Let's talk about and go back to TC Energy. They've abandoned the project. They're done, I suppose. Hopefully they can recoup some of their losses in this regard. What's the discussion surrounding that?
Well, we were deeply disappointed that President Biden did what he did. I mean, we had the opportunity. We could have shipped 100,000 barrels a day of Williston Basin crude down that pipeline as well, which is eastern Montana and western North Dakota. The more pipeline infrastructure we have, the cheaper the shipping costs are. It's just like anything else. When you got a surplus, the price goes down. The oil is still going to leave out of the Williston Basin. The oil is still going to leave out of Alberta, but it's just going to be a different means of shipping it. It'll either be by increasing pressures on other pipelines safely. I mean, they've all got their standards, or it'll be on rail or it'll be on truck. But it's going to raise the price, and when it raises the price of shipping, it lowers the the price of the crude oil. So there again, if we're producing oil off of state and federal lands, that drives the price down. The royalty owners are going to make less money. When royalty owners make less money and oil companies make less money, the government gets less money. I mean, when you look at federal leases, there was a piece that came out, oh, my God, we've got 7,000 outstanding drilling permits that haven't been drilled yet. That's $82 million or $84 million in permit fees. A federal drilling permit is $10,850. In Montana, it ranges at the state level from $25 to $150.
That's just a permit.
That's just the permit.
Right.
That doesn't take into account doing all your environmental studies, so on and so forth, which puts more people to work. You know, one thing about it, the government is good at creating jobs through government regulation because they just make it miserable to try and do business.
Well, that just drives up costs, too.
It drives up costs.
We need efficiency in that regard. Well, let me ask this question while you're here. I mean, what do you say to critics of the leasing program? And comment on the judge's ruling, comment on what the and this just came down earlier this week. There's still yet to be determined, as I mentioned. But what do you say to the critics of the leasing program that it's outdated, that the prices are too low, that there's a lack of transparency in it? Address some of the legitimate concerns.
Well, you know, lack of transparency. You go to the BLM's website, and I mean, it's about as transparent as you can get on their leasing policies. The BLM manages, there again, about 700 million acres of federal minerals onshore in the United States. Mm. Out of that 700 million acres, 3.7% of that is under lease. 1.9% is under production.
Mm.
For people to say, well, it takes it off the table, you can't recreate on it, you can't do this, you can't do that, that couldn't be farther from the truth. Just because the minerals are under lease, it doesn't stop other surface activities. They're grazed, they're logged, they're recreated on. People aren't prohibited from entering federal land that's under a mineral lease. Even when it's under production, it's still open. As far as saying that, oh, we can't plan for wildlife, false. And I'm going to use the sage grouse as a prime example of that. There are a number of federal leases, mineral leases, where you can't even have surface occupancy if you go in to drill a well. Some of that we can get around. And I'll use the Bakken as an example, where you're drilling a 2 to 3 mile horizontal leg under the surface. Mm-hmm. You can rig up on private or state land, but even there, Montana's a little different than Wyoming. We've got a lot of checkerboard federal ownership. We've got a lot of federal ownership where it might be just a 40-acre parcel inside of a 640-acre section. But if they take that 40-acre parcel off the table for leasing, you can't penetrate those minerals in a horizontal leg because you still need a federal permit to penetrate federal minerals. So you can tie up thousands of acres with a checkerboard pattern of just little 40-acre pieces, and that's private minerals and state minerals.
You know, I got to come back. I got a news break. So what we're looking at then is potentially stranded assets.
Stranded assets, definitely.
We'll come on back and talk more about that. Alan Olson with the Montana Petroleum Association after these headlines from Brian Bennett. Alan Olson in studio, executive director of the Montana Petroleum Association. Before I run out of time, I want to talk about stranded assets because it's not just TC Energy, Alan. There's a lot of businesses that have invested in the resources around. So what do they do? How do we recoup these stranded assets that come about because of, as this judge found out, likely illegal administrative policy?
Well, the judge put in place his injunction because he thinks that the plaintiffs have reason to win. Congress has delegated, the BLM will have these lease sales. So we're going to have some more answers on that coming up probably within the next few weeks from the BLM on their plan and see where they're going to go. But when they shut this down, you know, you got to keep in mind these federal leases include offshore lease money, royalty money. That's what funds the Land and Water Conservation Fund.
Right. Yeah.
That's what funds the maintenance money for Glacier Park, Yellowstone Park, things like that. So this is the thing that gets me about the Biden administration. You know, he wants to talk about infrastructure, but only infrastructure that's paid for with tax dollars. He wants to talk about building up businesses, but only businesses that are getting built up with tax dollars. And I don't know how we're going to pay that back. You know, here we've got a very robust industry, although it's cyclical, but it's all private investment. And that private investment pays the taxes to run the country, to run our local schools, to run our city governments. But I just can't understand where Biden's going to build up business in this country totally with tax dollars.
Like I said, the math doesn't add up. I got a figure here, but I won't have time to discuss it. But here's some good figures. Almost 30,000 permanent Montana jobs created by the petroleum industry. $71,000 average earnings. That's more than two-thirds higher than the state average. $2.3 billion in total income paid to Montana households. Just some final thoughts. You got about 50 seconds here and then we'll have you back on, Alan. Energy's key.
Well, let's go back to TC Energy for a minute. You look at the investments that TC Energy made, billions of dollars. That is now essentially wasted money. But you also got to look at the contractors that were hired to work on this project. One of the primary contractors is a Montana company, employing hundreds of people. And what they had to do to gear up to take this project on, spend millions of dollars, how do they recoup that?
Right.
We've got a little mom-and-pop company up there in Havre that employs four or five people, same thing. His investment is gone now, and he has to eat that.
It's not right. It's not fair to them. They need a way to recoup that. Alan, I appreciate you being here, really. It's good to see you. You're looking well. I'm serious.
Clean your glasses, buddy. Tom.
Yeah, okay. We're back with more in a bit.